Lemonade. Mark McKinnon is here. Mark McKinnon, that's his theme song.
For the circus.
Literally is his theme song for the circus, which is, you see this on the Showtime, Sunday night, 7 o'clock Chicago time, Circus the Inside, the greatest political show on earth.
It's great.
That's actually what it's called. And Mark, and it is great, and it is inside, and I just pray. Now, obviously, this is not the for this Sunday, I don't know if you're able to get it in or not. I don't know. But I just pray that you had a camera backstage at the Trump International Golf Club and Resort or whatever the hell it was in Jupiter, Florida, where he brought out the steaks and the wine and magazine.
Oh, yeah. Wasn't that amazing? You know, my colleague and partner, Mark Halpern, has a daily show on Bloomberg, and they cut that together and did it with the QVC music from the QVC show.
Perfect.
It was hilarious. It was really funny.
How do you make sure you don't miss a circus? There are so many circuses, it
seems. Well, I mean, part of the reason I love doing this is that Showtime was so committed that they really put up the resources. So we have 3 and sometimes 4 full-time crews, and I mean big crews of like 6 or 7 people,
nice,
all fanned out across the country covering, you know, making sure that we're covering all the circus acts out there because there's so many.
Right, and you can't, and there's so many. It's not even just the candidates. It's as
it's not the candidates. In fact, we had this great scene in the last episode where we decided we'd go find the establishment or what's left of the establishment in Washington. We took them to dinner, and so what we did is we found like the 6 most prominent, you know, very recognizable people from the establishment and took them to this really fancy Washington place where, you know, fancy politicians go in Washington and had this sort of, you know, what seemed like an off-the-record conversation but was on the record. And it was amazing just to hear what these guys were saying about the whole Trump phenomenon, the establishment. And it felt kind of like dropping in and overhearing a Mafia Don conversation. It was really interesting.
So I want to go through that a little bit too, because what you find is that I don't know, Mark, maybe you've noticed this on the road too. How many weeks ago did you do that? A week ago? 2 weeks ago?
Sunday, yeah.
Yeah, but no, when did you actually sit down with these guys?
Oh, like the Friday before that. I mean, we're editing in stuff into our Sunday show that happens on Saturday.
Okay. So the thing is that I have noticed, so that is a, you know, it's a but not even a week ago, quite. You have, maybe it's just me, but I'm noticing almost a softening tone amongst some of the so-called establishment types. Maybe not the guys that you were sitting down with, because again, high profile, high powered.
No question about it. Yes, they are softening. In fact, a couple of the guys in that group who were sort of longtime standing Republican national chairman and committee men, 2 of the 6. We're very much softening their stance, and they're basically saying, you know, if he's the nominee, then we're, you know, we support the ticket. So yes, there's absolutely softening, and you see, you know, increasing numbers of the establishment, you know, accepting what many think is inevitable, and are making their moves.
Well, what is the hope, do you think? I mean, you've been around this so long, you've seen it from inside, and now you're looking at it from the outside in. What could the possible hope be here? Are they hoping that Trump is smarter than they think he is? Because the one sense that I get is that these guys think Trump is a brilliant, he's brilliant at being able to, you know, to speak in a really simplistic way, in an aggressive way. Primal was a word I heard used today. Mm-hmm. He's a primal speaker, and he, you know, he touches people's emotional cords, and he's selling to them. But he doesn't really have a very in-depth knowledge or curiosity about what's going on in government or the world or how all this stuff really interacts with itself.
Well, in fact, part of their hope is that he will recognize that and quickly move to kind of bring them into the tent so that he shores up the knowledge and the experience with, you know, some of the old wise hands around Washington. They, you know, in fact, some of those people think they have a better shot with him than somebody like Ted Cruz, who's really opposed to a lot of these establishment characters. But, you know, the interesting thing, even in this scene that I mentioned, you know, one of them, you know, said, listen, I've just got to admit that Donald Trump has a better handle on kind of the mood of the country than I do. And also, interestingly, I think, you know, there are those in the Republican Party that have felt for a while that the Republican Party has been adrift, that it's been all, you know, that there hasn't been a coherent, compelling message in the party. So, you know, they may be surprised by the direction this has gone with Donald Trump, but they acknowledge that the party has needed a new focus and that, you know, again, they may not agree with everything Trump's doing, but at least they're sort of admitting and acknowledging that Trump has, you know, put his finger on the pulse of some stuff that's happening in this country.
But it's, I mean, how much of this do you think is stuff that I know that, and some of this has been cut, was covered last week, but I'm sure more to come here. But how much of this has been caused by the reversion to the mean by the party itself, that the Republican Party decided to become much more populist than your William F. Buckley wing, than your the National Review types? The party intellectuals realized that they were kind of getting run over and they needed a maverick. And they quite honestly, in Ronald Reagan, they found a guy who was able to coalesce both things, right? You know, a guy that understood the arguments from a philosophical standpoint, but also knew how to whip up a crowd. And what you found, though, is you haven't had a guy of that talent in the last number of decades. You've had wonks and you've had fire throwers. And now you got a guy who's like the ultimate, not a fire thrower. This guy is actually an arsonist. And yet you have a...
Those are big fireballs.
Yes. Yeah. And really has no concept of the philosophy of it. So is this an admission that the policy didn't work? I mean, I don't understand.
Yeah, well, I mean, your fire analogy is perfect, because I've been describing it as the sort of the Republicans in general, writ large, have kind of soaked the joint in gasoline, and all of Donald Trump did was come along and light a match, mm-hmm. and the place just went, has gone up in flames.
Yeah,
but, you know,
true.
I mean, you're right. I mean, there are certain things that he's talking about that are so, you know, like trade. I mean, he's really an anti-free trader, which is totally contrary to the basic Republican fundamental orthodoxy on trade. And so,
By the way, also opposite of what he's done personally.
Yeah, right. I mean, he's, you know, his ties are made in China. So, so that's why it's, you know, when you think about kind of the bigger picture for those who are thinking about kind of the historical, philosophical underpinnings of the Republican Party, that's why they're really worried about Donald Trump, is they just feel like he's kind of catching a wave of populism, but it doesn't tie to any sort of coherent framework or governing philosophy. Now, on the other hand, to your point about Reagan, I mean, the one thing that's, you know, does give some people, it certainly gets their attention, is that he's drawing support from the typical sort of Reagan Democrat constituency, particularly in places like Ohio, Michigan, Pennsylvania, in the Midwest of the country that Reagan got, and that he may be able to bring him back. The problem is how many does he lose in that equation with Hispanics and others?
There's one thing about that, though. I mean, I hear that argument all the time. It's Reagan Democrats. No, it's not. It's not the same people. It's not the same voting block. Because the people that Reagan appealed to are now senior citizens, right? And most of them are retired. So the working class notion, that sort of the idea of who the Reagan Democrat would have been, they've had another 36 years of experience of life, or they've grown up in a different kind of environment. And they are responding, I think, to the pop culture nature of Donald Trump, the celebrity nature and the reality television nature, and the way that our minds have been reshaped by the way that we do television, essentially.
Yeah, no, you go to those rallies, and there's no question there's a huge celebrity factor. It's not like a normal political rally. A lot of those people, you can tell, they just kind of come out, and a lot of them leave early. So it's like they came and said, I just wanted to see the guy, that's all. You know, they don't even stay for the speech. They're just like, okay, they checked the box. They wanted to just tell somebody that they'd seen Donald Trump. So there's unquestionably, that's a big factor in the whole television personality is, you know, big, big part of it.
And the other piece of this, too, and I know that you address this, but the other piece that really is the scary thing, and again, I mean, and Mark, you've worked in a White House, so you know what goes on here, is he really did scare the crap out of the military last week. He scared them. I mean, and it was, and that's not easy to do, because, you know, they have to stop and go, well, what are we going to do here if he's going to start, you know, running up there and trying to enact. And I don't believe that even Donald Trump believes he's going to enact anything he says he's going to do. I think that the whole thing is about
getting elected.
Right. Mm-hmm. But God forbid, and who knows? And you never know, you know, people change, and maybe he gets high on his own supply. He's clearly, I mean, there cannot possibly be a guy as egomaniacal as he is. Right. But maybe he is. Maybe he thinks he can do that.
I don't know. I don't know about that.
Well, I mean, the other thing that's just so, you know, so odd and bizarre and sort of weirdly refreshing in some ways is, you know, he says, oh, I'm going to change. I'm flexible. You know, he just sort of says patently, you know, what people suspect about other politicians. He just says it. It's just like, oh, yeah, I'll change. I'll do whatever I need to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You see, that's that, that. Why is that not getting giving people pause? I mean, I know, again, it's
Donald Trump,
the physics of politics that we know, but it's still not right. I don't understand.
One of the big stories now is that Trump is poised to knock out both Marco Rubio and John Kasich if they don't win their home states. And that's next week. It's an important week. And what, you know, Mark, you've covered these things for a long time. Do you think it could be down to two pretty soon?
It looks like Rubio's going to have a pretty tough time in Florida. Kasich's got a little stronger play in Ohio. He could win there, but there's a good chance that it could quickly develop into a two-man race with Cruz. And, you know, somebody just did a report today that reflected that had it been just Cruz and Trump all along, Cruz would be leading in delegates. If that happens, and I mean, it's going to get down to that point fairly soon. You know, Cruz, I mean, it's still advantage Trump, but you kind of look at the calendar. I mean, he's still only got 60% of the delegates, so, mm-hmm. You know, Cruz is within a, you know, striking distance, so I think this thing will play out a while longer.
Wow, well, that's interesting.
We decided to go a few, you know, longer episodes this spring than we'd initially planned just because it's, you know, the interest and the drama is going on longer than we anticipated.
Well, we got Kasich on yesterday who said that. He said, listen, if I win Ohio, Trump can't win on the first ballot. He doesn't think in Cleveland.
So he's hoping for a brokered convention.
Yeah. And, you know, if that's the case, then it gets real interesting.
All right. Well, all I got.
And, you know, Kasich's an interesting kind of undervalued stock in this whole equation, too. I think that if he wins Ohio, there could be a real whole, and Rubio loses Florida, there could be a very quick and wholesale shift to Kasich. And people really like him. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I think all those Rubio Bush voters would instantly support Kasich.
Yeah, really quickly, can you give us a little preview of what on the other side? We spend so much time talking about the Republican side because it is so, can't take your eyes off it, right? Because
mm-hmm.
it's like watching a murder. But on the Democratic side, give us a little taste of what you've got on Bernie Sanders on Michigan's win night. I mean, everybody had to be shocked by that, including Bernie and Mrs. Sanders.
Absolutely.
Everybody was. I mean, that was probably the biggest upset of this election season. I mean, nobody thought that Sanders could win that. So that's a huge lift for him. He had a great debate last night, really on fire. So and he's raising money, lights out, you know. So it's just fascinating that on one side we have this, you know, billionaire real estate guy, and then we have this Jewish socialist on the other side who's made a, you know, who would have thought that he'd be, you know, in the race this long and mm-hmm. making it close. It's fascinating.
Maybe there is hope for a postmodern America. Maybe this is what it is. Maybe people don't judge so much anymore. The whole judgy thing is over, and it's
yeah.
like what
do you got?
We want to vote for what we think we should be told, mm-hmm. and that's what we're going to go for, and that's going to be good enough for us. It's very Homer Simpson. That's all I can say. All right,
Thanks, Mark.
You're the best, and the circus
out there.
The circus is what it is. Thank you, sir. We'll talk to you next week.
Hey, kick it hard. Thanks.
All right, thank you. I'm going to adopt that as my catchphrase, too.
What?
Kick it hard.
Kick it hard.
Kick it hard.
That's a good Texan phrase.
Yep.
Someone taunting you on the text line, President Trump, woo. President Trump, woo. And then like 100 more times.
I know. They're taunting me because they're enjoying my angst. At least I hope they are because that's paying the bills.